This is a CBC podcast.
That's good there, Ed.
So the lifter's gone through.
It's left of the trees. They're kind of just sitting on top of the soil.
Can you teach me how to pull one of these trees out of the ground?
These have a lot of roots. They tend to fuse together a little bit.
If you yank it out, you'll yank all the roots out.
So like maybe I just killed this tree.
You may have, yeah. Yeah. So you kind of want to just tease it out a little bit. And you can see now you've got each individual tree separated here.
Okay, because all the roots are intertwined here. So I need to try not to kill a tree to start off our tree show. Shake it loose. Hello, little tree.
Yeah.
How does this tree
look? That looks
good.
Perfect little tree.
We could be looking at one of the 2 billion trees.
This would be one of the 2 billion, yes.
Pretty cool. Okay. Maybe I'm not great with plants. I'm not sure I'm going to get invited back to that nursery to transplant any more seedlings. But I do understand a few things about politics. And the federal government's 2 billion trees program is a political lightning rod. I'm Catherine Cullen, and on this special edition of The House, can the federal government actually get 2 billion trees in the ground? Should they even be trying to? Justin Trudeau had big ambitions when he pitched the plan in the 2019 election campaign.
Trees are remarkable. They pull carbon out of the atmosphere. So what we're going to do is plant 2 billion trees over the next decade.
It turns out that is a bit of a slog.
They are not on track. They're not on track to accomplish their planting goal, and they're not on track to have it have any effect on net emissions by 2030.
The program has not really been designed to achieve its goals. The program has been designed to meet a slogan, 2 billion trees.
So let's get past the slogan. We'll meet the seed harvesters, the tree growers, the people securing the land for those trees, and the policy experts to find out whether Canada can and should plant 2 billion trees. This special edition of The House is now in session. If you're going to grow trees, or pretty much anything, you start with seeds. So we head out to a seed orchard. To me, it just looks like a forest. It's run by the Forest Gene Conservation Association. Carrie McLavin, CEO.
Here's a little branch that I cut off of one of the trees here. And this is white pine. This is the Ontario's provincial tree. It is a very significant component of tree planting down here, because when you're planting in an open field, white pine has the ability to grow really quickly.
So it's you've got a branch here that's maybe not quite as long as my arm. I see 4 pine cones hanging off of it. Are they the stars of the show here?
They were. You can see they're all open now. And before they were open, little seeds were tucked into each one of these bracts here. And once they were absolutely prime and ready to grow into trees, the cones essentially open, the seeds fall out, and then they grow into the baby trees on the ground.
The trees in this seed orchard are about 35 years old, Carrie tells me. They reach as tall as a 2-story building.
We need to make sure we are picking the right tree for the right site. And that means more than just picking, a species, for example. We want species diversity. We want pines and hardwoods and conifers. We want that proper mix for that site. But we also want to make sure we're getting genetically diverse seed and trees. So we don't want to be collecting all 2 billion trees from the same tree. We want to make sure it's coming from a number of different trees so that we're sharing the right genetics and we're creating that diverse future population of forests. What I'm going to show you here is I'm just pulled down a branch here. And when we're looking for seed, we're always trying to look at the tops or at the tips of the tree. And that's where we're going to find the flowers of that tree. Okay, so
Carrie calls herself a seed nerd, and seeds are critical in the process. For 2 billion trees, she tells me at least double that number of seeds are needed. The first time you heard that the federal government said, okay, we want to plant 2 billion trees, what's the first thing you thought?
Seed. seed, because where do trees come from? Where do you get 2 billion trees from? You have to get the seed. Seed isn't necessarily an easy thing to come by, and it's not the first thing everybody thinks about. They think about, where's the land? Where are the trees, you know, growing at the nursery? But it's the seed is the what generates those trees. And so, you know, you could send people scouring all over the province or the country to get that many seeds that you need to grow these trees, or you can utilize sites like this that have, you know, had a lot of investment, have good genetics that we want to share to create those healthy, resilient forests for the future.
How hard is it to get enough seeds to plant 2 billion trees?
It's tough. Without using something like an orchard, you have an individual that has to be trained and specialized in seed collection. It's not a simple thing. You got to know when the trees are flowering, how that seed is developing, whether it's good seed or bad seed. So all that factors in even before the collector has to get the seed. Then it's got to be bagged and tagged and processed and cleaned and ready for that nursery step for them to grow it. So it's in a significant process that's very much undervalued in the whole system.
Is it your sense that there had to be a bit of a reality check from the moment this was first announced to like understanding the process of what it really takes?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think with any decision at that level, you know, where do you get these numbers from? It sounds like a great number. And yes, it's really important that we plant millions and billions of trees because of our climate and how it's changing. But there does have to be that reality check, because people can't just turn, you know, these things on overnight. We need investment early in the process. And if that doesn't happen, we need investment as soon as we realize that we need to fulfill these needs.
There is a bunch of money. There's $3.2 billion over 10 years to support 2 billion trees. Have you seen any of that money yet? Do you expect to?
Yeah, so sort of similar to the targets are meant to plant trees. And that's where the funding has predominantly been focused on, getting the tree in the ground, like that actual process. The funding hasn't necessarily been assigned to things like seed collection and growing the trees, which is a major gap, because the people who are planting trees aren't necessarily involved in all these other pre-processes.
Is it possible, though, that it will automatically almost lead to funding for you because it's creating a market for these seeds?
Yeah, you would think. I think the question at this point is, you know, we've had sort of standard planting numbers for the past few years. We haven't actually seen any incremental increase in tree planting in this province. So, you know, where are all these trees going? Who's getting the funding? And, you know, the nursery itself would start demanding that seed. People would start demanding that seed, and then we would get those kinds of calls, but the calls are not coming in. So, you know, where is the process sort of not working here?
Does 2 billion trees feel like the right choice of all the things they could do with that money to help the environment? Is planting 2 billion trees a good ambition?
I think it is. I think the number, although the number is very challenging to hit, I think the number has to be high to inspire people to do work. So, yes, they might not hit the target. And I think it's hard for people to understand that. But if we didn't see a big goal to strive towards, we wouldn't do the investing that we need to do at all the levels. And so I think it was the right decision to make it high. Now, whether they can hit that number might be a different question.
One thing that really struck me, like if this succeeds, these trees are going to be here and we'll all be gone, right? Like really thinking of but it's so interesting to think about the time horizons and then politics, which works in such shorter horizons. Are you worried about whether this program will be sustained if there's a change of government?
I mean, yes, but there are a lot of really good connections to the industry. And I think if funding goes to the right places and is invested in the right things, those things will carry beyond sort of a flash in the pan program, for example. And so I think something like this, where, you know, you're investing in the training and the knowledge, and you're investing in some of this infrastructure, like this is infrastructure here.
I've never thought of a tree as infrastructure.
I know. Well, you're talking about how you see this. I see these kind of as seed machines. Like they are beautiful, and they provide a habitat and they do this thing, but their real role was produce seed. And so they are seed machines.
I love that.
Those seed machines in the White Pine Seed Orchard produce hundreds of thousands of seeds. They end up at tree nurseries, like this one.
So these bags here would be seed that's passed through this tumbler already, and you can see there's a lot of debris associated with that, needles, cone scale, and other things. And you can see these are actually seed here with the wing on them.
It just looks like yard waste to me.
It basically looks like yard waste. And what we want to do is clean all of that out of there and end up with that.
In the coming weeks, Somerville Nurseries will supply 1.2 million trees to the 2 billion trees program, a little bite out of a big goal. Their customers are conservation authorities and private planting companies. Brent Forbes, the nursery manager, is giving me a tour to show me how much work goes into turning seeds into saplings ready for planting.
This is a Crippen seed cleaner. We call it a scalping machine, and it removes a lot of the large debris, needles, and cone scale. And out the back will come just the seed that we want to see for the next step of processing.
What is John doing up there? He's dumping a blue basket into the machine.
So that'll be a full basket of seed that's come out of the tumbler. This will be the first step in processing. So into the hopper at the top, and it's going to fall through two different screens on here of different sizes. And it is shaking pretty heavily, and it's going to sort that seed based on the size that can fall through the screen. If we go to the back of the machine, we can see the clean seed coming out the back.
Somerville Nurseries currently has 30 million trees in production in various stages of growth. We drive past fields of white pine and eastern white cedar, Norway spruce, and several different hardwoods like oaks and maples.
Birds are a big issue. So they love white pine seed. And if you get the crows are very smart. They'll figure out where you planted the white pine seed, and they'll just walk down the row and they'll just eat all those seed.
Just like undoing all of your work.
Undoing all of the work. And then squirrels and all the hardwood seed that we planted, squirrels are the major issue for that. I'll take you by some squirrel damage here, and you can see.
So are squirrels basically your mortal enemy then?
They are. They're always a constant challenge.
I see one in the trees there, lurking.
Lurking, yeah, waiting to eat some seed. We can hop out here. This is a good example of white pine production here in this field.
Okay, so we've got a field in front of us with a bunch of trees that are maybe just like a couple of fists high. Tell me what we're looking at.
So this is a field of white pine, and we've got three different products in here. So on
the company hires temporary foreign workers. They're due to arrive from Mexico this week. It will be their job to lift the seedlings out of the ground and bundle them up to send off to customers for planting.
That's good there, Ed.
The thing that strikes me, on top of the fact that it's sort of amazing to watch those trees just bounce out of the ground, is the smell is beautiful.
This is eastern white cedar, so it does smell quite nice. And this is a really nice cedar. This is what we're trying to produce here. So
you're just holding up this like perfect little tree in your hand, maybe.
Little tree.
Can you teach me how to pull one of these trees
yes.
out of the ground?
So when the lifter goes down the row here, it's lifted the trees. They're kind of just sitting on top of the soil. These have a lot of roots. They tend to fuse together a little bit. So what you want to do is kind of pull them out a little bit, kind of lay them down. And then you can kind of see each individual tree. And with the cedar, you kind of have to, if you yank it out, you'll yank all the roots out.
So like, I've got my hands on one here. How do I get this tree out without just,
Yeah.
I'm not, okay.
Yep,
we're shaking the roots loose from the other ones there. And so how does, hello little tree. Oh, there's two in there. Right?
You've got two in there. So this is not going to make size. So this is going to be a call tree. And this would be about our minimum size here. So we're probably just at 10 inches.
Okay.
And we're going to look at the roots too and make sure it's got lots of nice roots with it.
What do you think is the biggest challenge to reaching that goal of planting 2 billion trees?
For our nursery, some of the biggest challenges are seed issues, finding quality seed. We've gone through, we had a very good seed collection year last year, a very poor one the year before. So seed is always a challenge. And the weather, dealing with the weather and the effects of a changing climate. So dealing with drought and frost and late frosts is always a challenge. The biggest thing for any grower, when you're talking about our average production length for any species here is 3 years. Some of them, this tree species here is 4 years. Some of them are up to 5 years. So we need long-term, stable, predictable funding is really what we need. So to see the program continue and know that when we put a seed in the ground and we're going to grow it for 3 or 4 years, that when that tree is ready to go, that it's going to have a home.
So will the nurseries get what they're looking for? Nurseries already supply the forestry industry, who by law have to replace what they cut down. But none of that counts towards the $2 billion target. Rob Keane is the executive director of the Canadian Tree Nursery Association. I ask him how nurseries are gearing up.
Back in 2019, there's about 600 million trees being planted on lands that had been harvested and as legally required by the forest industry. So they need to come back in and restore those forests and get them replanted back to a free-to-grow condition. So with this program, with the 2 billion tree program, that would require about a 40% increase in all of the components of forest restoration. So as you indicated, increasing the overall ability to do that was a huge undertaking. And we've learned a lot. And we, the collective we of, you know, the forest restoration sector, the government, provincial governments as well, that you can't just throw a switch and expect those seedlings to all of a sudden be available. There's a lot of work that has to happen before those seedlings are going to be there.
If we talk about the next step in the process, who's going to plant all these trees?
Great question. And, you know, it's interesting. We can't just assume that, you know, there's all sorts of people lining up to get out and plant trees. It's a tough job. It's tough living conditions, tough working conditions. And so we really have to ensure that the appropriate incentives are in place to encourage people to come out and do the tree planting.
What is it that nurseries need from the government in order for this to succeed?
Yeah, so I really think that nurseries and all the various agencies involved with all the components of the forest restoration supply chain, they need that long-term commitment. They need to know that when they're growing trees, there's going to be a home for those trees, for the nurseries. The agencies that are out there increasing their staffing to be able to get out and meet with landowners to provide tree planting services, they need to know that that's going to be there and the services and the support is going to be there long-term. Otherwise, why would anybody invest in their infrastructure? So I think in particular for the nurseries, they need to see that. It's going to be a business decision. Most nurseries across Canada now are privately owned. And for them to increase their overall production, it's got to be a business decision. And if they don't see a long-term guarantee that that opportunity is going to be there or those resources are going to be there, then they may question whether they should increase their overall capacity or not.
Rob Keane says nurseries need a 10-year commitment to be able to plan for harvesting seeds and turning out seedlings. But even if Canada gets all the seedlings it needs, where will they all go?
You're looking at what was in 2021 a field of soybeans. So this whole property, 60 acres, all the field area was in soybeans, corn rotation, so it was a cash crop farm. And we have planted this into basically conifer with a interplanting of hardwoods.
There's pride when Doug Hevner looks out over this field of very tiny trees. He's with the Nottawasaga Valley Conservation Authority, an independent provincial government agency that addresses all kinds of local issues, from floodplains to forests. Part of their work is finding places to plant trees, like this former farmer's field.
So right here, we have Norway spruce. Next row, white spruce. You can see a little difference in color, a little difference in needles. And we move into a row of white pine. It's quite a big block of white pine. More white spruce. And that's what white spruce looks like after a year. It's usually quite yellow, and then it greens up and really takes off.
I see this, and I see like a field with some sort of yellowy green trees. Like, if we pull back on the big picture, what do you see when you look at this?
I see a forest. I can see these trees standing 60 feet tall. And I can see silver maples and red maples and sugar maples and red oaks being planted by Mother Nature growing up and coming up. And said a carpet of red osier dogwood, pollinators through here, robins chirping in the spring. That's what I see. You have to see that. If you don't see that, why are you doing it?
I think the one thing that may be hard for people to understand, and certainly it struck me when we first started talking about this, I mean, we think about Canada, we just think about enormous swaths of land. So why is it hard to find land to put these trees on?
Well, look at the reality of Simcoe County. Simcoe County is an agricultural bastion, 70% agriculture. Where does that leave room for urbanization and development? That's the competition, agricultural land, developmental land. So it's always a challenge.
What do you say to a landowner who thinks, well, I could sell my land to a developer, probably get a pretty decent price right now, knowing the demand for housing, or I could let you folks put a forest on there?
Certainly there are some people that are driven by, wow, I can make great profit, I got my retirements on this. Well, great, that's fine. Our job is to speak with that homeowner that bought the property and went, holy crap, I pay a lot of money in taxes. What can I do to live here, farm a portion of the land, and reduce my taxes? That managed forest program offers that.
So just so I understand, they're not making money for having the trees on their land. They're getting a tax break.
They're getting a tax break, but the thing that you've got to realize that there's some equations out there that show a 40-year rotation of corn soybeans and a 40-year managed forest harvested are almost equivalent. So every year you plant a crop, you harvest it, you get revenue.
Yeah.
Okay, you do that 40 times.
Yeah.
You plant a forest, and 40 years later, you go in and harvest it, and you get your revenue all in one shot. The return on investment is almost the same as the cash cropping. But when you look at inputs, the agricultural operation, pure nitrates, phosphorus, a lot of chemical application, that's the way farming has moved to, right? High tillage, possibilities for erosion, phosphorus hazard into the water, versus planting trees and having this habitat where there's infiltration, keeping the water where it falls, and that's what reduces riverine pollution. And that's what we're after.
You talk about going and cutting down the trees in 40 years. I can hear some folks who are going to say, wait a minute, the whole point of planting all these trees is that this is a place that's going to absorb the carbon emissions. What do you mean cutting them down in 40 years?
What's going to happen is you're selectively freeing up room. I'm coming through in these spruce and white pine areas here that we're harvesting. They've already been infiltrated by hardwoods that are coming up, and it's not been planted. Mother Nature is doing her thing, coming in and replacing this. So it's a perpetual forest stand with forest management to help curate that story.
My name is Susan Antler. I have a home in Utopia, Ontario.
How is it living in Utopia?
Well, there's days when it truly is utopian, and then there's days where we are human.
Susan is one of the landowners who said yes to planting trees. With help from Doug's Conservation Authority, she added about 2,600 trees to her property.
It has trees planted around the perimeter. And so this is about almost a 50-acre piece of property. It's been always a farmland. And so we've taken over about 3 years ago. And our objective is to take the farmland from conventional farming to one focused on soil health, so that it gets into making sure that it's a place where the microbes in the soil can do their magic to go ahead and have better productivity for our plants, as well as more nutritious food.
You are protecting Utopia.
I'm not sure about that, but you know, in terms of, I think it comes down to, eventually all of us are going to be in a museum. And at this point, our story, this generation's not going to look very good. And so I think in terms of what we have the opportunity to do is to speak up through our actions. Words are one thing, but actions are the rubber hits the road.
You are somebody who's pretty passionate about the environment.
I am.
This was not such a tough sell for you to put trees on your property.
It's an incredible privilege for us to be stewards of this property.
I wonder what you would say to other landowners who might think about doing this, but don't, they're not as clearly passionate about the environment and the long term as you are. What would you say to landowners who might be thinking about this, but might also be hesitating because they have other options in terms of what they can do with their land?
I think one of the things you have to understand is the fact that we all benefit from the unknown contribution of Mother Nature. you know, the pollinators, the soil, all of that is something that we don't put into an equation, a financial equation, but we benefit. And so I think it comes down to there are compromises, there's ways to go ahead and find the right equation that works for you. Planting one tree is a great way to start to get hooked on realizing where the future can be. And quite honestly, $2 billion is a number. Right? It's magical. It's like the victory gardens of World War II and World War I. It's a way to engage all of us, and all of us can do something.
Coming up on the House podcast, we'll speak to the minister responsible for the federal government's pledge to plant 2 billion trees. Stay with us. I'm Catherine Cullen. This is a special edition of The House from CBC Radio, examining the challenges of planting 2 billion trees.
We know that we can do more by planting 2 billion trees and using the power of nature to fight climate change.
That was Justin Trudeau back in 2019 when he first made the campaign pitch that a Liberal government would plant 2 billion trees. On top of the questions about growing all those seedlings, what about the big picture questions? Is this actually the best use of money to help the environment? To discuss, Christian Messier is a professor of forest management and biodiversity at UQAM, l'Université du Québec à Montréal. And Akash Maharaj is head of policy for Nature Canada, a national conservation charity. Welcome to the House to you both.
Hello. It's lovely to be here.
Christian, I'm going to start with you. This is a lot of work going into this program, a lot of money. Is 2 billion trees even the right goal if we're trying to mitigate emissions?
Well, we will not mitigate carbon emission by planting 2 billion trees. I think that has to be very clear. I mean, this is one of the many things we need to do. But again, often I say that planting trees is good because it does fix carbon, but it should not even be the primary goal. I mean, trees provide so many other services. I mean, they are extremely important for biodiversity. If we plant them in the cities, they really provide shade, they filter air, they really actually have a big impact on the mental health of the people.
I'm going to jump in here, Christian, because I really want to understand this. I mean, the Prime Minister's been pretty explicit. Yeah. Part of the reason that they are doing this is to mitigate emissions.
Well, yeah, because I think this is one of the most important challenge that we have, and it will have an impact. But again, 2 billion trees is not very much. I often give the example that last summer with the fires we've had, we probably had at least 20, 30 times more trees that have burned. So I think this is really a drop in the bucket. But I think every effort counts. And if we add all of the other services that trees provide, it is an important goal. But I'd like to maybe aim for 10, 20 billion trees.
But it seems like even reaching 2 is pretty tricky. I do want to bring Akash in here, though, and get your perspective on this. Is 2 billion trees the right goal if we're trying to mitigate emissions?
I've yet to meet a Canadian who does not love trees. And so a program that increases the number of trees in our country is always going to be a good thing. Is this going to help us achieve our emissions targets? The flat answer is no. The government itself has conceded that it has miscalculated the carbon footprint of this program. It will in fact be a net emitter of carbon until 2031 as a result of things like transportation, site preparation, greenhouses, and the like. There are other good reasons to plant trees, and in the long term, the planting of trees can be a significant carbon sink, but only if the program is well designed, only if it's designed to achieve those effects and not just be a slogan.
So let me ask you then, do you think, given the sort of upfront emissions costs, but then the potential long-term benefits, that this is still a good goal?
It's absolutely a good goal, if it's well implemented. The problem with the program is not that the goal is not laudable. It is that the program has not really been designed to achieve its goals. The program has been designed to meet a slogan, 2 billion trees. It's easily understood, Canadians love it, and the media will print it. It has not really been designed to take account of the fact that you need to have biodiversity in those trees, you need not to cut down those trees after they've been planted, and you need to have those trees in the ground in the long term. None of those things are part of this program. And as a result, it was never designed to achieve an objective other than to generate headlines.
I think I agree with Akash that, I mean, they came up with this program not knowing how difficult it is to plant 2 billion trees starting from scratch, because already the nurseries are already booked. And I think one thing that I've actually been successful is really, really push for a diversity of trees, really move away from these monocultures, both in the cities and if we plant it in a more natural environment. And I think when we start planting different species, sometimes species that we don't even grow, then we have to actually even promote collection of seed, growing them in nurseries. So it's much more complicated than we first thought, I think. So I do have to agree that the 2 billion trees is a slogan, but I think we should move beyond this and realize that we could use trees as a solution, not only for carbon, but for many other things. And it's a very good objective. And hopefully we'll learn from it and do better and even increase our objectives.
Was there a moment, Christia, when you were working as an advisor that you saw something that really made it clear for you that there was perhaps some naivete around this?
Yes. When we look at the amount of money that the government had put aside for this, I think this was clearly insufficient, because to me, really have a successful program, we have to make sure that the trees will survive and follow them for at least 10 years. And I don't have the precise cost, but I will say that each tree should cost around $30, imagine. So it's a big amount of money that was not planned
so
at the beginning.
$60 billion for this program instead of, I believe it's just over three that's set aside right now.
Exactly. People had calculated what is the cost of planting a seedling like the industry does when they replant. They put a seedling in the ground and walk away. Well, that's not what this program was about. And I think there was another problem with the planification of it.
Akash, you raised some significant concerns there. What is the most important thing you would like to see the government do right now, adjust in this program to make it thrive, work better?
You know, none of us expects the government to be infallible, but we do expect it to be honest. So when a program goes awry, it is reasonable for the government to say it's not achieving its objectives, therefore we are going to modify it, we're going to change it, we're going to extend the timelines. That's entirely fair. What is not fair is to rewrite history and to simply claim victory when you've actually suffered a defeat. What I would like the government to do is to be forthright and honest about the fact that it simply has not been able to plant the number of trees that it had intended, and that it did not put enough safeguards in place to ensure that those trees have the effect that Canadians expected. So there are two areas where they can make immediate changes. The first is that they can prohibit the people who are planting those trees from cutting them down within 5 years. Because right now, that is entirely allowed by this program, which means that, in effect, it's little more than a subsidy for the lumber industry. Lumber industries that were going to plant trees anyway so that they can harvest them in a few years are now being subsidized by the government to do precisely what they were going to do already. There should be a requirement not only that the trees have to stay in the ground, but in addition, that there be biodiversity amongst the species of trees that have been planted.
So, Christian, I want to ask you about some of that. The idea that this could be a subsidy for the lumber industry, is there's nothing built into the program to stop that?
Well, I have to say that I'm surprised, because when I was there at an advisor, it was clear that this could not be subsidies for the industry. But I think things have changed after a while, and because they wanted to ramp up the numbers, they may have gone to that route. But where I disagree a little bit is, actually, I will give you the example. There is negotiation between the government of Quebec and the program to help the province replant a lot of the forests that have burnt. And I was actually asked to give some advice, and I say this could be a good strategy only if we use the trees to diversify. So I totally agree it should not be a monoculture, and to plant trees that will be better adapted and even reduce the risk of fires. And unfortunately, it seems that the Quebec government is not accepting these conditions, so that the program will not provide money to plant monocultures. So either they have changed, but I think right now the idea is, let's use these trees to do something different, to do something better. And I think this is a good strategy, and I think it could even encourage government to change the way they see the reforestation of the forest following disturbances. Again, and I say that every time We should avoid monocultures. We should diversify with species that are well adapted to the current and future climate. And I think if we achieve this, then this will have been maybe a precursor for even a better program.
Thank you both so much for your insights today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Akash Maharaj and Christian Messier. Now, forestry companies are not allowed to use the 2 billion trees funding to plant forests they are already legally obligated to replace after logging. But Maharaj believes they could harvest from any new forest they plant with 2 billion trees money. So what does the government have to say to that? And the issues we heard about on the ground from the people actually trying to produce and plant these trees. Jonathan Wilkinson is the Federal Minister of Natural Resources. Welcome back to the House.
Thank you very much.
Almost everyone we spoke to told us they don't think the government quite realized how challenging this was going to be, ramping up seed production, finding nurseries, finding land. Was the government, frankly, a bit naive in the beginning about how hard it's going to be to plant 2 billion trees?
I'm not sure we were naive. I think everybody recognized that there would be significant challenges starting out. And we all knew there were going to be some growing pains. If you saw, for example, the projections around the number of trees that would be planted, a lot of people, certainly the opposition, often takes 2 billion divides by 10 and says, you know, well, you're behind because you didn't plant 200 million every year. We recognized in the profile that it was going to take time, that it takes time to actually develop the number of seedlings before you're going to be able to plant them, and that the program would actually accelerate as it moved forward. But certainly we have learned as we have gone. We have put in place a number of additional measures or refined measures to ensure that the program was working more effectively as we moved along. It was always going to be an ambitious thing, and we certainly didn't say we had all of the answers at the beginning. It's been an evolution, and I think it's been a positive evolution.
You mentioned the numbers here. It's not just the opposition saying, hey, this doesn't divide properly. The 2 billion trees program is not actually going to, on its own, plant 2 billion trees. A departmental expert said more than 100 million of those trees would count from existing programs like the Low Carbon Economy Fund. You've also been accused of creative accounting by the Environment and Sustainability Commissioner. How can Canadians trust that the government will actually plant these 2 billion trees with all these concerns around the numbers?
Well, look, we've tried to be pretty transparent and put out updates periodically in terms of where we're at with respect to the program. The program from the beginning was 2 billion trees that the federal government would plant from all of the various programs within the federal government. The bulk of those are actually housed within the 2 billion tree program in Natural Resources Canada. But we've always been clear, and certainly even the funding that was allocated was based on the fact that there were other programs in government that were doing some of this. It's pretty small. You know, I mean, if you say 100 million trees coming from the Low Carbon Economy Fund, that is about 2.5% of the overall envelope. But that was the basis of planning from the very beginning. And at this stage, we've planted 110 million trees. We've secured agreements for 400 million trees. We are fully on track to achieve the 2 billion trees goal. And, you know, we've made a commitment to report periodically so that we're transparent about the progress that's being made. And we are doing that.
Another issue that has been raised, I mean, when the Prime Minister talks about the program, he is explicit about this as a means of mitigating carbon emissions. The Environment Commissioner said that's not going to happen this decade. The experts we just heard from say it's really a drop in the bucket. It shouldn't be a primary goal of the program. Do you think your government has overstated how beneficial this will be for the environment?
Well, this will be beneficial for the environment on a number of different levels. The commissioner is right that the gains by 2030 are pretty modest. But by 2050, it's significant in terms of sequestering carbon. And that is important because we will have some applications where there is combustion of fossil fuels that are very hard to abate. And you've got to have negative emissions. That either comes from nature-based solutions like planting trees, or it comes from things like, you know, carbon engineering's technology that essentially pulls CO2 out of the atmosphere. But you do need these kinds of things, and it is important in that context. But I would also say it's increasingly important for other environmental reasons, for the protection of biodiversity. So planting trees in areas of destroyed caribou habitat, for example, to stop the decline of caribou in this country. It is about the increased activity around forest fires and actually reforesting areas that have been burned. So there are enormous environmental benefits from this program. One of those is climate, but there are others as well.
The program doesn't require landowners to keep the trees, though, for decades to come. How do you know that a bunch of these trees aren't simply going to be chopped down?
Well, we actually set up a panel of experts a couple of years ago to help us with, you know, managing the whole way in which the program would work, including what we mean by permanence. And no, you can't cut them down after a couple of decades. Part of the agreement that you sign when you take this out, whether you're a private landowner or a province or territory, is that those trees must exist through the period where they are sequestering the most carbon, which is a minimum of 60 years.
Because I had understood that, in fact, landowners weren't required to sign contracts like that because you feared that people wouldn't be willing to make those kinds of commitments.
Well, as I say, we work pretty closely with a group of experts. The bulk of the trees, you know, are done under agreements in principle, and those actually do require permanence that has a definition.
I haven't heard about that aspect of requiring that these trees stay in place for decades and decades. Is that something new?
So there wasn't a definition around permanence at the beginning of the program. This is one of the things that we have evolved over time. I asked a group of experts to get together and have a conversation about a number of different issues, including the issue of permanence. They came back with a number of recommendations. And certainly in many of the agreements that we're now putting into place, there is a definition that requires that the trees are actually planted for a certain period of time.
That lack of definition has led to situations like what we just heard from Nature Canada, who say, well, forestry companies can apply and there's no limit on the trees being cut down. So this could wind up being a subsidy for the lumber industry. Are you concerned that that's the impression people have been left with about this program?
Well, I am concerned if the folks, particularly folks like Nature Canada, who I would think would know this, don't. So I think it's important that we are very clear about that. And I certainly will be having people reach out to Nature Canada to have that conversation.
Just to be explicit, all the 2 billion trees have to stay in place for, I believe you said, 60 years?
So as I say, this wasn't in place at the beginning of the program, so I would hesitate to say all 2 billion, but certainly as we move forward, the focus is on ensuring that these are that permanence is defined so that it's not that you can plant a tree and 5 years later you can cut it down.
Okay, between the challenges of getting enough seed, getting enough seedlings, the very real prospect, Minister, that there could be a change of government soon, how confident are you that you're going to reach this 2 billion tree goal?
Well, I mean, certainly the challenge around seeds and seedlings was particularly acute for the first few years, where you're trying to actually get people to grow far more seedlings than they had planned for prior to this program. And so we've had to work through a bunch of issues, but I would say we've made enormous progress. I was at a nursery in Prince Edward Island just a little while ago, and they were talking to me about the progress that they've been making, and we've seen that happening across the country. So I think we're working through that. Clearly, there's still some more work to do. In terms of the longevity of the program, I mean, I would make the case to people that this program continues, certainly, so long as there is a progressive government that believes in fighting climate change. If folks were to elect Mr. Polyev, who, to be honest, is either a climate denier or certainly doesn't believe that climate change is a very important issue, I think all bets are off for this program.
And I've never heard him say that climate change isn't real.
I've never heard him say that climate change is real. And I think that's the test. It's not to say him saying that it's not real. The test is, does he actually believe it? And is he going to have a plan to address it? And right now, Pierre Polyev's plan for climate change is essentially to let the planet burn. So at the end of the day, people will have to reflect on if they like this program, if they do think that the government should take action on climate change. That's a ballot question for people in the context of the next election.
So you're hoping that 2 billion trees could be a deciding issue for some Canadians? If you want to keep your 2 billion trees, you've got to vote Liberal?
No, I think climate change and protecting the environment and to be honest with you, having a relevant economic plan for a future in which all the other countries around the world are actually moving to address climate change is an important issue. It's not just 2 billion trees. It's a much broader set of conversations. And that's a conversation that we need to be having with Canadians who on balance, the vast majority of people believe in climate change, want their governments to take it seriously and want them to do something about it and want them to ensure that in fighting climate change, they are seizing the economic opportunities of the future. And that is what I have been working on here for 9 years. That is what we will continue to work on if, in fact, we are reelected. But I will tell you, if Mr. Polyev is elected, all bets are off.
Okay. Mr. Wilkinson, we're going to leave our conversation there for today. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you.
Natural Resources Minister Jonathan Wilkinson. We asked Conservative leader Pierre Polyev's office whether he would keep the 2 billion trees program if elected. The office didn't answer our question, but instead sent a statement about its plan to ship Canadian natural gas overseas to help other countries reduce their emissions.
That's almost it for our special episode, but we did want to take a look at one more aspect of the 2 Billion Trees program, the Indigenous funding stream. One group that has already tapped into 2 Billion Trees money is the Six Nations of the Grand River.
These are some of the species that have been just breaking dormancy. Basically, the seed wants to grow. So you bring it out under the grow lights and introduce a breeze to it. You have to let the plants dance in the breeze. That builds their strength. Just like, you know, humans, when we're learning to walk, we need a little bit of stress. Sometimes, you know, your toddler falls over when you're learning to walk. That's the same thing for the plants. They have to have some stress put on them, some breeze, so that they can move around and build their strength.
Gerardo Deere is showing me tiny seedlings being buffeted in the wind of a fan. He's the ecological team lead for Gayanasi, a greenhouse and ecological restoration facility that's part of the Six Nations of the Grand River. They've already received funding to fix up their greenhouse in order to produce seedlings for the program.
Hey.
Okay, this is where all the action is, I guess, eh?
Yeah. This is where all of our current stock, actively growing plants are being kept.
So we've got this enormous space. I can see plants on rows and rows of tables. I can see plants on the ground. They're all covered right now. And this is a space you've been able to upgrade. Why does it look different now because of this 2 billion tree money?
It looks different now and because we've added the watering system. We've been able to put in the concrete pathways for better access into the greenhouse and for increasing our ability to be productive. Prior to that, the other half of the greenhouse, you know, was out of production. And with the grant, we've been able to bring that back into production because the roof was damaged and we needed to repair it. And so those repairs have been vital to our ability to implement tree production, forestry production.
Some of the experts that we talked to getting ready for this program said what you guys were doing here is really special. You're getting it right when it comes to conservation. What is it that you're doing that's unique?
So on top of growing these native species and engaging with partners in the industry, we also engage with the community. We engage with whoever basically wants to come here and learn and work with us. And we bring our perspective of the community, which is, you know, the Haudenosaunee perspective. You know, it's an Indigenous First Nations perspective. And so some of the traditions that we have here in the community do guide our operation. So when it comes to things like seed collecting, we have cultural practices that we incorporate into that process. When it comes to planting in the field, we do have some of our traditions sort of overspilling into that practice in the field as well.
Could you give me an example?
Yeah. So I myself, when I'm out there collecting seed, I will talk to the plants and let them know that what we're doing out here and why we're out here collecting the seed. And that's reflective of our medicine gathering practices. So when we gather medicine off of the landscape, we're talking to the plant, we're showing that gratitude and appreciation to the ecology and those systems, those natural systems that we rely on.
What is it that you say to the plants?
So it depends on the day. And often I'll tell the plant who I am, my name, and that I appreciate, you know, the role that they're fulfilling. And I encourage them to continue to fulfill that role because it's very important not only to our survival but to the survival of the ecology, you could say. And when we see these things growing on the landscape, it's almost like medicine. You know, we derive healing from it in our minds, and our families derive that healing just to see the flowers and the plants growing. So I'll say that to the plant. You know, that's normal for us to do that, you know, when we're raised in a traditional upbringing.
You think Canada can do this? 2 billion trees?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't hesitate at all?
No.
But you're confident?
Oh, yeah, I'm confident.
Why?
For sure. Because I see a general understanding of why it's important happening in not just Ontario, but all of Canada. You know, everyone knows that we need to do something. And so, you know, as we grow and expand and organize ourselves, I think people are going to make it more accessible to people that you're going to jump on.
That's it for our special edition of The House, but let us know what you think about what you heard. You can reach us at thehouse@cbc.ca. This week's show was produced by Kristen Everson, Emma Godmere, and Christian Paz-Lang. Our senior producer is Jennifer Chevalier. I'm Catherine Cullen. Thank you so much for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.